Thanks for tuning in to the Falcon Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Jansen, mild-mannered manager of the Falcon Theater in Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Together with my son, Noah Jansen, the self-professed movie snob, we're going to enlighten and entertain you with our immense movie knowledge. So sit back and relax. But if you're currently driving a vehicle, don't relax too much. But enjoy this episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the Falcon Theater Podcast. 100% movies, 100% of the time. And if you don't like it, well, I guess that just that sucks for you. We unfortunately do not give 100% refunds. So, unfortunately, you're out of luck for today. But for the next hour, you'll be able to listen to us ramble about movies and, well, I guess mostly just movies, I guess, and the Falcon Theater.
We research movies so that these other people don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. 100%. If you're wondering why I'm saying 100% so much, apparently I've been informed that I say 100% quite a bit in the last couple episodes, and there's been some listeners who have been having a drinking game for every time I say 100%. So we're going to kind of see today how many times I either consciously or subconsciously say 100%. So at this point, I think that's like, what, 8 drinks already?
If they're already started, they're well in the bag already.
Oh, they better be. They better be, or else they're cheating. So
I've even ordered some Falcon Theater Podcast 100% t-shirts. So once they come in, I'll post them. And if anybody wants Falcon Theater 100% t-shirts, just let me know, because I can always order more.
Are they made with 100% cotton?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways.
100% for sure. Okay, so let's start off. I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up at the Falcon Theater. First of all, this weekend, we have a little movie coming up called Monkey Man. And you may not have heard of this movie, and I am so excited for this movie. When I read about it, it's basically John Wick, but even more violent and set in India.
I mean, John Wick is already pretty violent, so I don't know how you can get more violent than that, but I'm down for it.
From what I've heard, the violence is the works. It's got everything, including nose biting.
I mean, if there's one thing I really like, it is violence, but only in a movie sense, not in real life. Remember, real violence is bad, but violence on the screen is good.
I'm afraid that some people might not have heard of this movie and maybe you'll skip it thinking, oh, this is whatever. But I really think this is one you need to see in big screen. And
I 100% agree there.
Part of it is if you understand where it's coming from. Dev Patel, the guy that he has written, he's directing it, he's acting in this movie. He's from Slumdog Millionaire, if you remember that movie.
Yeah. I think isn't Slumdog, I think, behind Titanic? I think it's won some of the most Oscars the year that it came out.
Did it really?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was up there for like 9 to 10 Oscars that it won, like including Best Picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
And not only is Dev Patel, you know, the big name, this is his baby, but apparently he originally was just going to make it for Netflix, but Jordan Peele saw it and was like, no, you've got to create this for the movie theaters. And so he came on board as a producer in order to get it into theaters. So that's pretty exciting.
It's really cool when you know, other film, I mean, they're both already big celebrities in Hollywood. I think they're like, I don't know how much Dev Patel is as much of a household name, but I mean, he's been in quite a bit. But it's really neat seeing like guys that are obviously passionate about, they're not just doing it for the paycheck. They're doing it because they enjoy making these movies and seeing how they are supporting each other and lifting each other up. Like I really like that.
I agree. Yeah. 100%.
100%.
The weekend after Monkey Man, we have a little documentary called 500 Days in the Wild. And this is starring Diane Whelan. She
spends, well, apparently close to 6 years traversing the Trans-Canada Trail. And so this movie is about her journey through the Trans-Canada Trail. So it's another one that I think is really important to see in big screen.
Because I want to just rewind for 1 second here. Now, I'm no mathematician, but is there not 365 days in a year?
Yeah, I don't think she does it fully day by day.
I think 6 years is a few more than 500 days there, Diane. I think that's a little misleading for a documentary.
Oh, perhaps we should just cancel her.
Oh, cancel culture's come again. No, that'll be a really good. I'm such a documentary. Like I love just putting them on. Like they're, just, I don't know what it is about them. It's so relaxing, I find, to even ones that are about not relaxing topics. Like Jody can vouch the amount of times I'm like, you know, hey, do you want to watch a movie tonight? And she's like, sure. I'm like, oh, let's watch this. And it's just a documentary. She's like, that's not what I had in mind, but sure, we can watch a documentary tonight.
I like the write-up about this one. It says, for a woman in her 50s who's not an extreme athlete, it was sometimes grueling, occasionally harrowing, often exhilarating, and always surprising. And so, you know, for me, being a guy in his 50s, seeing somebody do this who is, you know, approximately my age, I think that adds to it for me as well.
Well, it's good to know I got a few years before I have to worry about doing this. I'm yeah, clear.
You 30 years before you have to do the
trail. Exactly. Oh, thank goodness. I'll start working on it in 29 years.
The weekend after that is the start of May, and we have a little movie by a company called A24 called Civil War. And watching the trailer, I find this movie, to me, it looks really kind of terrifying almost.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to get the chance to watch it. I mean, unfortunately, people in Tisdale, you don't have an IMAX. I'm hoping to get the chance to see here in Regina and the IMAX. But hey, next best thing, I mean, go to the Falcon Theater and watch it. I was reading something that apparently it is the first A24 movie to be the number one in the domestic box office for its opening weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like apparently it's done quite well, but it's I'm very curious because apparently they take a very apolitical stance in the movie. Mm-hmm. It just presents kind of of what is going on in the movie, like not trying to say, hey, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys. Like they kind of just let the audience decide on how you want to interpret it. I've heard that the last kind of third of the movie is like you are on the edge of your seat. Like it is a very almost stressful, intense final act of the movie. So definitely one that is worth seeing. Apparently the sound is also quite good in it.
I'm excited that by the idea that they're doing it from the perspective of the journalists that are covering the war.
Like usually in those ones, it's like, you know, oh, here's the army macho man that he's got to save the day and kill the bad guy. But these they're just presenting, this is what's going on, which is kind of real to, you know, what actual war journalists do, which is a very, very dangerous job. Like they'll go in with maybe a bulletproof vest or something like that. But at the end of the day, that's really all they have. Their weapon is their camera and spreading the world, you know?
Well, they can't really do the whole ruha, wooha, I'm American, I'm coming in to kick ass, because this is America versus America. So you can't really go in with that same, you know.
And I mean, I think it was smart of them too to be releasing this on an election year for the United States as well, because there's already, you know, the numbers are already quite high down south there from us. So hopefully this movie is just a work of fiction and does not become a reality. But
yeah, that would be scary for us, wouldn't it?
If I had to choose, I would much sooner have the Captain America Civil War happen over this, because, I mean, I think that would be a lot cooler.
Yeah, I agree. The weekend after that, we have a movie called Challengers, May 10th to the 12th, starring Zendaya. And I actually just watched the trailer for this one. I didn't know much about it I still don't know a ton about it other than it's a tennis movie, and it looks like she was a tennis player who got hurt, and she became a coach to, I think, her husband, and he's pitted against his best friend. But from the trailer, it looks like there's a love triangle that develops between the three of them, maybe. I think it's like a sport movie / rom-com, but I don't know. It's kind of weird looking.
So what you're saying, it is not about the 1987 Challenger explosion disaster.
1986
Challenger 86, explosion. Sorry. I wasn't there. Mini Noah knows. The Challenger was quite famous for having that teacher on the flight that exploded. Do you know who originally was supposed to be on there instead of the teacher?
I do, but I've forgotten.
They wanted to get kids interested in space, so they wanted to put Big Bird from Sesame Street in it, but they couldn't. The shuttle, so they had to go for a teacher. Could you imagine what would happen on Sesame Street if Big Bird would have exploded on live television?
Oh, fuck, that would have been funny.
Snuffleupagus would have been heartbroken seeing Big Bird die.
Yellow feathers everywhere. The whole Earth's covered in yellow feathers.
Oh, that would. I'm curious what the. I want to see someone make an alternate reality movie about Big Bird dying in the Challenger explosion.
Yeah. You know who we should talk to about that is your friend Blaine.
Yeah. Hey.
Blaine would do that, right?
I'm sure he would.
If we got on board with him.
We'll have to. We'll sign him up.
Yeah.
We're enlisting him against his will. So.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, anything else we have coming up?
Yeah, well, there's one other movie that I want to talk about, and I actually don't have this movie confirmed yet, but I'm kind of excited about it, so I wanted to bring it up. It's a movie called Cafe Daughter, and I'm hoping to have it in May, but I don't have confirmation yet. So this movie is about a half Chinese, half Cree woman named Yvette Wong, who is struggling to find her place in a small town in Saskatchewan during the 1960s. Now, the cool part about this is, first of all, it's based on a true story. So it's based on the life of retired Senator Lillian Dick. And so in it, apparently it was made into a play, and now it's been made into a movie. And so in it, she embraces her Cree identity. Her mother growing up was always like, you have to hide the fact that you're Indigenous. And she would tell everybody she was Chinese. But throughout the movie, it sounds like she starts to learn about and embrace her Cree identity while she pursues her dreams of going to medical school during the 1960s. So I'm kind of excited about it. I think that's
really cool. That'll be, it's always nice too, when they get the opportunity to, you know, tell stories that are, you know, local to us, you know, like obviously the rest of those movies are cool, but I mean, I feel like a lot of people around Tisdale could probably relate more to that than, you know, say Monkey Man, you know?
Yeah. No. And typically movies like that seem to do well here. So that's cool.
Well, let's keep it going.
Finally, one last thing that I wanted to talk about with regards to the Falcon Theater is the fact that we are going to be getting a facelift at the Falcon Theater. Not me personally, although I could probably use one.
Yeah, no, we definitely could use one there.
But the Falcon Theater is going to be getting a brand new exterior. All the old stucco will be taken down, and they're going to be putting up new siding and new frontage on the front of the theater.
When are you expecting this is going to be taking place?
Well, at the board meeting that we had, they said a couple of weeks. So it depends on the workers and when they can do it, but it should start fairly soon, within the next few weeks, I'm guessing.
Awesome. Are you still going to be able to be playing movies during this time?
As far as I know, yes, because it's just going to be on the exterior. Okay. So we should be able to continue playing movies. And I know I know the interior also needs a facelift, but you know, one thing at a time. And
if it's the interior, is it a facelift?
Oh, good question.
A tummy tuck.
That's what whenever we can redo those interior panels that are stained, we'll call it a tummy tuck. Yeah, perfect. For sure. One other movie that I have confirmed, it's not till June though, it's an early confirmation, but June 7th to the 9th, we're going to be showing The Fall Guy. So that's also one last little tidbit about the theater coming up.
Well, awesome. That'll be good. Good. It's this spring all around, like not just, I mean, for The Falcon, but just movies in general. It was a bit of a lull there in the wintertime, which it usually is, but... coming up to summer, it seems to be a pretty good lineup. I'm going to be, my wallet's going to be hurting by summer, by July time, because I'm going to be wanting to go to the movies almost every day to catch up with everything that's coming out.
Yeah, I think the winter, you know, January, February, part of the problem was still the repercussions of the strike last summer, that there wasn't a lot of movies come out. But because of that, some of the movies got pushed till now. And so they're coming out now, and so, you know, that's good.
Good, good, good.
Yeah. Even like the biggest movie this year so far has been Dune 2, and that was supposed to be in November, but it got pushed. So, you know, it's kind of boosted the 2024 numbers a little bit for the
I mean, it's good having something really good during that bit of that lull season too. So
yeah. Okay, another movie I want to talk about is a trailer that I just saw the other day. It's called Fly Me to the Moon. Have you watched it?
I've heard the song, but I have not. I've not had a chance to see the trailer for this. What's it about?
So it's Scarlett Johansson and the guy from Magic Mike.
Oh, Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum, yeah.
I hate that I knew immediately who that was. I'm not a Magic Mike aficionado. I just
you totally are.
I'm gonna go watch Magic Mike right after this. I have it playing in the background right now.
Star Wars, Magic Mike. You've probably watched them about equally, haven't you?
He has a way with him, you know.
So anyway, Fly Me to the Moon is set during 1969 during the Apollo 11 moon. When they're trying to get the Apollo 11 to go to the moon. And they're trying to beat the Russians, of course, at this time. And so Scarlett Johansson is first of all hired as to do like press for the moon landing. But then as they go along, the White House starts to realize, like, if they don't make it to the moon, they need a backup. So she's actually directed by the White House to fake the moon landing in case they don't get to the moon.
And oh, interesting.
So, yeah. It's coming out, I think, in July, and it looked super interesting.
I wonder if it's coming out on the anniversary of the moon landing.
Oh, maybe.
The moon landing wasn't in July. Have you ever heard of the theory? Because there is obviously people who do genuinely believe that we never went to the moon and that it was faked. Have you ever heard of the theory that it was actually Stanley Kubrick who directed and faked the moon landing?
No, I have not heard that.
And on top of that, he was very, because of him directing the moon landing and feeling guilt about misleading, when he made The Shining, there's conspiracy theorists that allege that he has hidden messages throughout The Shining about him faking the moon landing.
It is
one of the worst documentaries I have ever seen. It is just a bunch of nut jobs, like nitpicking the most. Like it's like stuff like the Danny wearing a sweater that has the Apollo 11 on it, or the carpet in the Overlook Hotel sort of resembling the landing pads of the Apollo. It is one of the most like. Those, like, you know, the History Channel and the alien, like, conspiracy guys.
Yeah,
it's, like, up there with that. It is one of the worst documentaries that has ever been made. It's almost, like, laughably bad. Like, these guys are insane. So, I'm curious to see what the reaction will be once the movie comes out.
I know people have already started to say, well, people already think the moon landing was faked. Why would they make this movie? But I think the movie sounds intriguing. And not to mention, I mean, 1969 was like one of the greatest years in all of history.
Yeah, because, I mean, we know what happened in 1969.
Yeah, we had the moon landing. And we had there was a little concert that took place during 1969. And then I was born, right? So, you know, it was all super important stuff.
And then it just went downhill from there, right?
Seems like it. I don't know. Another movie that's coming out this summer, or movies, I should say, because this is a really intriguing idea. There's a movie called Horizon, an American Saga. And it's starring Kevin Costner. Now, it looks like it's a Western, which doesn't surprise me with the whole Yellowstone thing that Kevin Costner
likes. He likes to do his Westerns.
The thing about it that I find intriguing is that Chapter 1 of the movie is coming out in June, and then Chapter 2 of the movie is coming out in August.
Is it a streaming movie, or is it coming to theaters?
Well, I got the poster, so I'm assuming it's coming to theaters.
Because, I mean, but I know some streaming services that are like Zack Snyder and that Rebel Moon movie he had that came out in the fall. I believe the part two is already coming out like this summer, which is less than a year since the first one. So maybe this is going to be a new trend we're going to see with movies releasing like kind of two parts within a year of each other.
Yeah, just a few months of each other.
Yeah, that's neat.
They're obviously hoping that part one's going to do well, I guess, because you'd hate to put out part one and it bombs, and then all, oh yeah, we got this other one coming out. That,
you know, shit, guys, we have all this money in this movie.
Madam Web part two. Can you imagine how that would have done?
Oh, the webbing.
Another question I have for you.
Oh, what's that?
Roadhouse on Amazon Prime. Have you seen it advertised?
I haven't. Jody watched it when she was with her family last, and she said it was pretty awful.
Well, like that's not surprising, because the original Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze was pretty awful. So why would they do that again?
I mean, I don't know. I'll be honest. The extent of my knowledge of Roadhouse is, like, obviously I know of it, and I know Patrick Swayze was in it. My only real connection is from Family Guy when they make the Roadhouse reference with Peter's kicking everybody. That's about as far as I know for Roadhouse. Although I did see a clip online, because, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. I do love Jake Gyllenhaal as an actor. Conor McGregor, I think, is the bad guy, and I've heard he's not an actor. He's horrible, but I did see a clip that had a line that did make me laugh. It's Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor, and they're fighting, and Conor McGregor plays like essentially himself as a gangster. It's like a UFC fighter, and they're on a boat fighting, and he says, "Look at this, you're in the octagon with me now." And Jake Gyllenhaal looks at the boat, and he's like, "Who taught you shapes?" And I did get a good chuckle out of that. I thought that was a funny line. But no, I mean, it's not one that. It's one of those, I think, like kind of campy movies from the 80s. Not one that I think has a big enough fan base of people being like, yeah, we need a new Roadhouse movie.
Well, you got to understand, Noah. Okay, your mother loved Patrick Swayze. She loved Dirty Dancing, and she loved Roadhouse because Patrick Swayze was in it.
There's so many other Patrick Swayze movies you could have picked.
Well, she loves all of them.
Even so, the bad ones, eh?
I have tried and tried to convince her that we should watch this new Roadhouse on Amazon Prime, and she refuses. She's like, no, there's only one Roadhouse, and I will only ever watch that Patrick Swayze Roadhouse.
If they don't pull like Egon from the new Ghostbusters movie and have a ghost Patrick Swayze come and kick him in the Roadhouse, kick him and save the day, like that would make the movie a 10 out of 10 instantly.
Or, like we talked about last time, they could do a Weekend at Bernie's Roadhouse where Patrick Swayze's dead, but they just like move him around as if he's still alive.
Yeah, zombie Patrick Swayze.
So, you know, you take a movie like Roadhouse, like the original, it's bad. I thought it was a bad movie when it came out. I've rewatched it since. I still think it's a bad movie. But it brings up the idea that instead of remaking great movies like they always do, why don't they take bad movies that are based on good stories that but didn't meet expectations and then remake those?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, and not so much in like a sequel sense, but like a full-on like a reboot, more or less. Like they're refreshing the franchise kind of type thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
like, you know, I think a lot of the time there's movies too people don't realize are a remake or a reboot, you know? Like, oh, we kind of talked about too with The Fall Guy. The Fall Guy is a reboot of a TV show, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The Thing, like from 1980, was a reboot of a 1950s, like, cheesy B movie. I know Scarface with Al Pacino is a remake of a 1930s movie called Scarface that was essentially the same idea, you know? So there is, I mean, they can do it right, but I think it depends on what's the intention, whether it's, you know, you're doing it to make the story better or you're doing it for the nostalgia sense, you know?
And I get the impression that this Roadhouse is being done for the nostalgia, but I don't know. I haven't watched it because, like I said, mother won't watch it with me. And I don't intend on watching it by myself. One movie that I think needs a remake because it's a great book, it's a great story, and it was the absolute shite movie, was The Hobbit.
Yeah. I mean, they should. It's as much as, like, sometimes it's like, oh, man, like, you can't fit it all into the book. It's, they could tell the Lord of the Rings effectively, you know, each book in one movie, but then they take one children's short story and make it into three movies.
Well, and it was such a shit show. The I forget who was supposed to direct it. They quit, and then Peter Jackson was just thrown in there, but it was already partially made, and he had to work with what he had, and he got a short timeline. The whole thing was just an absolute shit show. But I think if you gave it the time and effort that they gave to Lord of the Rings, they could actually make a really good show out of it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think, honestly, it's like, just from how it's been most of the time, they haven't turned out like any reboot kind of movies, you know? I mean, Mad Max, that was a really good reboot of the, I think we kind of talked about that last time with the Furiosa, you know?
Yeah. I don't really, yeah, it's a reboot. It's not a remake though.
No, it's not. One I've thought it was really good is, have you seen any of the newer of the Evil Dead movies?
No, I haven't.
They're really good. They take everything that the campiness of the originals, and they really kind of boost it up with just extra gore. And you can tell that the people that were rebooting and remaking it, were fans of the original movie. They weren't just doing it for the buck. They were doing it because they cared about the movie. And yeah, Sam Raimi's original Evil Dead movies are great, but they're cheesy. They're low budget and everything, and they boost it up quite a bit, you know?
Oh, that's cool. No, I haven't had a chance to watch them. I'll have to try.
I think you would really like them. And as well, it kind of is a bit relevant because there's another one coming out here in the next couple of months. But I've really personally enjoyed the new Planet of the Apes movies that have been coming out over the last 10 years or so. You know, because, like, how many Planet of the Apes movies were out in the 60s, 70s, 80s? There was, like, what, 13 of them or something like that? And
I only remember the original.
There was a lot. I don't know if it's exactly that many. But, like, the first one is obviously beloved. And I think it was during that, like, sequel era of the 80s where they just kind of were pumping them out. And I would honestly say, like, the new ones where, what's his name? Oh, Andy Serkis does the motion capture for the monkeys. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and then the third one. It's actually one of my favorite movie trilogies. If I were to rank trilogies up there, like, I'd probably put it in my top five. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed the new Planet of the Apes movies. So that's another one that definitely benefited from getting to retell their story.
It seems like they took the time to set it up properly. They didn't just throw together a remake. They actually took time to plan it all out. And I don't know if they did or not. It certainly looks like they did.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%.
Another one that I'm curious about, because I've heard a rumor that they're going to remake John Carter, Warlord of Mars, which really surprises me, because the one that came out a few years ago by Disney lost $200 million. It's like one of the biggest losses in Disney history for a movie.
It's actually, I think it's one of the biggest movie financial blunders in history. It was, and it wasn't that the movie actually did quite well. The movie brought in like $200 million, but it was just the budget for the movie was almost, it's one of the most expensive movies ever made, because there was so much like a producer and like studio meddling. They had to do reshoots and everything. And it's kind of like, cause it's based after a book from like 100 years ago,
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yeah.
He also did Tarzan.
And like Dune, it was kind of referred to as a movie that was could never be made into a film. They were actually trying to make John Carter into a movie since the 1930s.
And that's part of it. Part of the rumor is that since Dune has done so well, that there's rumors that they're going to redo John Carter, which is Warlord of Mars is a really good story.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's honestly, like, it didn't get the best reviews, but it wasn't like a critically panned. Like, it was just an average movie. But it was, I was reading about it actually not too long ago, and the one big blunder behind it was the people who went into making the movie. They were actually very passionate about making it. They really cared about the story and bringing it to screen. But where it failed was the marketing for the movie. Apparently it was a very new, inexperienced marketing team. Like, I don't even remember the movie honestly coming out. Like, it just seemed like a kind of a crappy action sci-fi movie, and you know, like, oh, whatever.
They also didn't call it Warlord of Mars. I think it was just called John Carter. And everybody went, okay.
Like the guy from Terminator. But I was reading a thing about it that some people theorized that Disney purposefully sabotaged the marketing behind the movie.
That seems weird. Like, why would they do that?
Because they made the movie and they were hoping to make it into sequels, like make it into a series of movies. But when the movie was coming out, and it was a big movie, was right around the time Disney was acquiring Star Wars from George Lucas. And the theory is Disney did not want to have two sci-fi trilogies of their own competing in theaters against each other. So they were like, you know what? We're going to be getting Star Wars. We're going to make money off this. Let's just get this out here. And we don't want it taking away from our Star Wars money. And so there's some theories that Bob Iger kind of meddled with some of the marketing with it, because he didn't want it to hurt his Star Wars money.
Well, I've not heard that. I'm surprised they didn't just shelve it like Warner Brothers does.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, that's something that makes me really... I think that if a movie is... or if a studio does that as a tax write-off... for a movie, that it should just go into the public domain at that point, so it can still, because like, people put so much work into it and have all your work just thrown away just for a tax reason. Like, I think that is completely the opposite of why movies are made.
I agree.
I understand it's a business and movie making is a business, but at the end of the day, you know, it's, you know, that would be like Picasso making a beautiful painting and then an art gallery saying, well, it's going to make us more money if we just, you know, put it in storage.
Put it in the closet.
You know, like, that is something that makes me just, it really upsets me when studios do that.
I agree. So let's move on. What have you been watching lately?
Well, the movie I watched here just this last week was The Zone of Interest, or A Zone of Interest.
I have also watched that recently.
It was, oh my goodness. It is on Amazon Prime for anybody that wants to go ahead and watch it, with the preface letting you know that it is subtitled. It is in German. But even with that, like, honestly, there's not a ton of dialogue. It's a very, it's just mostly kind of the sound and the audio of the movie. I'll say that it was one of the most, and not saying this in a bad way, but like, it was one of the most upsetting movies I have ever seen. Like, it really makes you just sick to your stomach watching this movie. So fantastically done. I mean, it won Best International Film at the Oscars this year and was also nominated for Best Picture.
Why don't you tell people what it was about? Because some people might not know what Zone of Interest.
They're not all
movie. What did Mother call it the other night? I can't remember. Anyway, they're not all like that.
So, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So the movie follows the story of Rudolf Hess, who was essentially the head guy for the Auschwitz concentration camp. And the movie is just about him and his family living their lives. You know, they have their little house, and he has his wife and their kids. And, you know, it's just about them, like, oh, today is his birthday, and today we got to do stuff in the garden, and let's go swimming and everything. But the whole time that this movie is going on, their house is right next to Auschwitz. Like, literally, like, there's a wall dividing them, and on the other side is the camp. And throughout the entire movie is all of the horrors that are going on at the camp, you know? So they'll be out
there. They don't show us the horrors.
No, which is, I think, just so much stronger. Like, it almost lets you, because we've all seen, you know, the pictures and, you know, what happened in these concentration camps. And I think it's such a powerful thing, like, having the sounds going on and
you hear the trucks and the screams and the gunfire.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Like, there were so many times that I was just like sick to my stomach, and it really just goes to show like how nonchalant the Nazis and the Germans are in the movie. Like, they're just living their lives. They have no care for what's going on. And, you know, they take pleasure in it. They reap the benefits of what's happening to the Jewish people and what they've taken from them. And yeah, no, it was
this movie's not for everybody. Like, no. It's weird. The first, 4 minutes of the movie is just a black screen.
Yeah, and there's a couple of parts in the middle where they, I think it's a red screen. And again, it's a movie that you could honestly, like, you could just listen to the entire movie. You wouldn't even have to watch it. And I feel like it would still convey the same emotional response that watching the movie would have. You know, I don't want to spoil the movie into what goes in, but at the ending, like, you know, it was such a well-crafted film from start to end.
Powerful.
Yeah, movie. It's definitely something I think it should be something that should be, like, at least for, like, a, you know, if a high school class is, you know, talking about the war and the Holocaust, I think it would be a really, you know, good movie to show in that sense. Because, I mean, a lot of the times people also make the comment of, oh, well, how did people not know what was going on in the camps during that time? And the movie goes to show that they did know what was going on. They just didn't care. And this is how their lives were going on, you know? And I mean, the really sad thing is there's places in the world where stuff like that is still kind of going on, in a sense, like genocide's happening on the other side of a wall and people are just living their lives, enjoying it and reaping the benefits of the death. So unfortunately, just kind of like Civil War, how slowly kind of predicted, maybe, hey, this will happen in the future. Zone of Interest kind of showing that the history in a way does a bit repeat itself out there in the world, and there's still horrors going on. I mean, if you think about it, we're kind of just living our life, and while people are dying, not right next to us, but still, like, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really opens a person's mind to what's going on and how things could happen.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. So definitely one that I would recommend. It's not one that you put on as a background noise. Like, even if I'd saying, like, it's a movie you can just listen to, it's one you have to pay attention, even if you're just listening and just take in what they are presenting you with.
I would recommend you put aside the time and sit down and really give the movie the focus that it deserves.
100%. No, I think it's something, I think from years to come, it'll be a movie that'll be very, very important for people to go back and rewatch and view again.
A little bit on the lighter side, something that I've started watching, TV show, not a movie, but a TV show called A Gentleman in Moscow, starring Ewan McGregor.
Oh, what is this on? What platform?
I forget. There's too many platforms. I can't keep track.
That is true. It's cable all over again.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really cool show. Your mother and I have been watching it. We both read the book. So it's a book that they've turned into a television show. And we've only gotten a couple episodes in. But I just have to say that I really, really like how they have incorporated the book into the show. You know, sometimes when you make a show from a book, they have to leave a lot out. But so far, they've done a really, really good job of incorporating it into the television show. Again, we got a little ways to go, but we've just started.
Well, that's good, because that's not an easy task, because it's a completely different medium, literature to film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an easy task to.
Yeah, no, your mom and I both read the book and both loved the book, and so you know I'd recommend check out A Gentleman in Moscow if you're looking for something to watch. Another thing I watched last weekend, I watched Godzilla and Kong. And I'll be honest, I missed the first, like, almost half of the movie because I was doing stuff and I at the theater and I didn't have time to watch the first half. So, you know, from what I saw, it was a lot of Godzilla and Kong fighting things. I didn't really know why they were fighting. But the one thing I wanted to point out that made me laugh so hard, if you've seen the trailers, you see that there's a baby Kong. There's a little baby gorilla. And at one point, the baby gorilla is with these guys against King Kong, and he grabs the baby gorilla by the leg and starts beating the other gorillas with baby Kong. And then he throws them. I couldn't believe they were doing that. I'm like, he's hitting the other gorillas with the baby. But it was kind of funny. So, yeah. Anyway.
That's great. That's awesome. This isn't, I mean, you were talking about a TV show. This isn't a movie. This is a TV show as well. But the on Amazon Prime, they've just released the Fallout TV show. So for some of you who may not be gamers, Fallout, it's a game series that's been going on since the 90s. Came out as computer games in the 90s and then had a bit of a lull, and then the company Bethesda in the 2000s came back, and there's been three newer ones that have come out since, and
they're all post-nuclear war.
Yeah, it takes place like 200 years in the future. Now, this is something we should have had Eric on. He's the For what I am for Star Wars, Eric is for Fallout. He knows everything inside and out and backwards and every which way. But it's a very well-crafted universe that's been made. And I mean, if you ever have a chance to play the games, they're absolutely amazing. And so far, I'm only about, I think, a third or a quarter through the show so far. But it's I've been very, very much enjoying it as a Fallout fan. As well, Jody, who's never played any of the games, has been watching it with me, and she's been enjoying it as well. They do a very good job of mixing between people who have not seen the have not played the games watching the show, and people who are fans of the games playing the show. There's the little things that you know fans are familiar with that they just kind of throw in as, you know, the sounds and like certain, you know, items and stuff like that. The production value is quite high, and they you can tell they took care. They really did, you know, they were fans of the game series and definitely, you know, wanted to tell it. And it's a separate story, you know, even though it's in the same universe, it's a separate story from the games. So it's allowed to kind of have a little bit of freedom. So no, it's definitely one that I would recommend. It's a little, there is a little bit of silliness, which sometimes I think you know, it does go maybe a little bit too much into the goofiness, which Fallout does have some goofy parts. A few times I kind of was like, okay, you're getting a little too goofy. But for the most part, I'm excited to see the next episode. And they released all of them once. It wasn't a weekly release. All episodes are out to watch now, so you can do a binge watch on the weekend and watch them all. So
that's cool. I tried playing the Fallout games numerous occasions, and I just can't get into them. I love the Skyrim, that style, same type of game, but I just haven't been able to. But
which one did you try? Fallout 3?
A couple of them. I don't know. But I am looking forward to seeing the show. I just haven't had time to sit down and watch it yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
So, what do you know?
Well, I know some things. So this is actually something that I heard about it a little bit ago, and I saved it because I wanted to talk about it on our next podcast. So I think, you know, we're pretty familiar with pop culture and film, so we're familiar with the actor Kirk Douglas, correct?
Yeah.
So Kirk Douglas, that is not his birth name. He was born in Russia. His original last name was like Danielovich. And then when his family moved to America, he changed his last name to Dembski. And then when he got into the acting world to create his stage name, he changed his name to Kirk Douglas. So, and I believe that wasn't just a stage name. His name was legally changed to Kirk Douglas. So his son, who is also a famous actor, Michael Douglas,
yeah,
obviously took his father's name. But here's the thing where it gets a little bit funny that you might not know. So there is a very famous actor in Hollywood whose legal birth name is Michael Douglas. Do you know who it is?
I don't. You better enlighten me.
Well, I will enlighten you. A little known actor, you might have heard of him. His name is Michael Keaton. His birth name is Michael Douglas. But due to the rules with the Screen Actors Guild, there cannot be two actors registered under the same name. It's done so that small, like, kind of those B-movie studios that make the, like, Sharknado-type things don't try, because they could get an actor and get him to register under the name of, you know, oh, I don't know, Tom Cruise, and then they could put on the thing starring Tom Cruise to get people. It's a way so they...
But it, like, would be C-R-E-W-S, Cruise.
It could be, but, you know, it's a way to avoid these B-movie studios kind of scamming, so you have to register under a different name. So Michael Keaton, who is legally known as Michael Douglas, had to register under a different name because Michael Douglas was taken, so he picked the name. I don't know why, but he picked the name Michael Keaton. So,
oh, that's cool.
Now, I'm really curious if there'll ever be an actor come out whose birth name is Michael Keaton, and his name hasn't changed. But going off that, that's also, it kind of goes in the same reason that the actor Michael B. Jordan has to have the initial anytime he's credited as Michael B. Jordan, because the basketball player Michael Jordan had to register under the Screen Actors Guild when he starred in the movie Space Jam.
Right.
So the actor Michael B. Jordan has to register himself under that, because that name is already registered in the Screen Actors Guild.
Cool. And I loved the joke that they did in the second part of Space Jam.
That was going to be my next thing. I love that.
I found Michael Jordan, and everybody's like, yay! And yeah, it was Michael B. Jordan. I enjoyed that.
That was one of the only really good parts about that movie.
Yeah, that you're right. The first one was awesome. Second one, not so much. So, is Star Wars news for us?
We got Star Wars news. So coming up here, so Bad Batch, we're coming up to the last, I think, 3 or 4 episodes here. Far, I've been loving this. This has been my favorite season so far.
Me too. It's been awesome.
I've like every episode, like I've been like, even in the first two seasons, like I would watch the episodes, but I sometimes would watch them a day or so after they would come out. But these ones, I've been watching them the day they are out. But anyways, Bad Batch finishes up here early May. And then in June, we're going to be getting the new Star Wars live action show, The Acolyte, which premieres on June 4th on Disney Plus. I'm really interested in The Acolyte because it's the first time we're actually going to be going Star Wars movies. It's taking place, you know, 200 years before the rest of the mainline movies were out, during the High Republic era, which is the era of Star Wars where the Jedi were at their peak. You know, this is the Jedi, you know, the Jedi we see in the prequel movies. I mean, that's their downfall. That's when they've been kind of blinded by their own, you know, arrogance and everything. And it's kind of honestly the Jedi at their weakest. So High Republic is going to be, you know, seeing them, that'll be a really cool opportunity. The movie also sounds, or not the movie, sorry, the TV series is going to be following a group of Jedi who are investigating, from the sounds of it, other Jedi who've been getting assassinated, who I'm assuming by the Acolyte. The one thing I'm really excited to see is there is a Jedi who is also a Wookiee, and I absolutely love that.
Yeah, that's a cool idea, because we haven't seen that before, have we?
We've only seen the normal Wookiees.
Yeah, yeah.
Chewbacca, but that's also, I mean, I love Chewbacca. Who, this Wookiee Jedi is actually played by the actor who did the body work for Chewbacca in the new Star Wars movies.
Oh, cool.
Another no one knows. And as well, not exactly movie or TV, there's a new Star Wars game actually coming out this and end of August. Star Wars Outlaws. It's going to be, takes place between episodes 5 and 6, actually. And you play as this kind of scoundrel smuggler girl who gets involved. It sounds like she kind of wrongs one of the major criminal syndicates. It's a new syndicate. It's not the Hutts or the Pikes or the Crimson Dawn, but she essentially wrongs this major syndicate, and they put the largest bounty that has ever been placed on a person in the Star Wars timeline. And so it's about you getting a team. Like, kind of sounds like almost like an Ocean's 11. Like, you have to do this major heist to pay off your debt to this crime lord. The one thing that's really cool is they've confirmed, I don't know if you remember, what was her name? The girl who plays Khaleesi, Emilia Clarke, who played Kira in the Solo movie and takes over Crimson Dawn. Her character is set to also reappear in this game. So I'm excited for that. Cool. It is Ubisoft, so we'll be a little cautiously optimistic because they can be hit or miss. But at the end of the day, it's Star Wars and I'll love it.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of Star Wars and the whole Star Wars universe, like, if you could pick one movie universe or movie place to live, which one would it be? Where would you pick to live?
I mean, as much as I love Star Wars, I don't know if I'd want to live in the Star Wars universe.
Especially under Palpatine.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, there isn't, anytime we see what's going on in Star Wars, there's always the threat of planets blowing up and, you know, people dying. So I mean, I don't think I'd want to live in the Star Wars universe.
So I mean, the question, you have to kind of adapt the question, because, you know, you could say, well, it'd be cool if you were a force wielder to live in the Star Wars universe.
That is true. That would be.
Or if you had superpowers to live in the MCU or the DCU would be cool. But let's just say you're a normal lackey living in one of these universes. So you're just a regular Joe. You're not one of the big guys. You're regular Joe. Where would you like to live?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I think what would be a really cool movie universe to live in would be if I could live in the Who Framed Roger Rabbit universe. I think that I recently went back and watched it, and it is such a great movie. It is so, like, if you go and there's on Disney Plus, they have a behind the scenes on how the movie was made, and it is just so amazing, the care that's put into it. And I think it would just be cool getting to, you know, live in a world where you could meet Bugs Bunny, or, you know, you could hang out with, you know, all of these Hanna-Barbera characters and everything, you know. And end of the day, I'm a real person. I don't have to worry about getting, you know, the prejudice towards me that the Toons get, or getting destroyed by, you know, the dip in that movie, you know.
Not to mention just getting to see Jessica Rabbit.
Well, I mean, that too, you know.
She's a looker.
Or even maybe Bugs Bunny when he's dressed up as a girl bunny.
Hey, maybe I could get the head massage from him. That'd be awesome.
I mean, hey, that kind of, I feel like I'm living in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I have rabbits that are digging up my front lawn right now, and I feel like I'm going to turn into Elmer Fudd here real soon, getting those wascally wabbits, I feel.
You're gonna
so
be
no, that
there.
would be you're, my pick for.
You'll be in your front yard. Your neighbors will walk by. You'll be like, be very, very quiet.
Although I do have a Elmer Fudd moment when I was a kid, when I was like, what have I done? I killed the wabbits.
Well, you didn't kill it. You certainly injured it, and it cried like it was dying.
Oh yeah.
That I will never forget that day.
Neither will I. I still wake up and have nightmares.
About the poor little bunny that you shot with an arrow.
I was not a good aim.
You know, of all the movies out there, like I love Lord of the Rings, but any of the medieval worlds would not be a good place to live if you're just a regular lackey. Like even the Old West would be similar. You know, go to the John Wayne era movies. Like it would be really hard there for those people. You know, and then you can talk about the Star Trek universe. Star mm-hmm. Trek would be pretty sweet because there's no money in Star Trek, so you can just work doing whatever you want, you know, or so any utopia society movie would be kind of cool. But I don't know, I think those are just kind of cop-outs to say that. And then I was thinking of, well, what about the Pokemon universe? Because that would be kind of awesome, because you wouldn't just have dogs as pets, you could have a Charmander as a pet. That'd be pretty sweet.
I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, if technically you could live in the Pokemon universe now, if you go around the world and collect some animals and go up to random strangers and at the dog park and challenge them with your monkey that's spray painted blue and have them attack their, you know, and then you take their money. What are they going to do? You have a monkey that can, you know, throw razor blades or something.
Of course, there is always the ethics of capturing a semi-sentient being in a little ball and keeping them in there till you let them out. I think I would struggle with the ethics of being in the Pokemon universe.
I saw a picture once that was like, you know, a person, you know, in a bed cuddling with like a Pikachu. It's like all cute. And then there was like one that was like you wouldn't know it's a Pokemon that looks like a big muscular man. It was like cuddling it in bed. And it's like, ah, oh, that's kind of weird.
You know, I'm going to go completely sideways here. And I'm going to say that if I was to enter a movie universe to live, I think I'd want to be the dude from The Big Lebowski.
I mean, you already can do that.
Well, you know, perhaps that's what I'm aspiring to since I'm retiring. I'm just going to live in my bathrobe all day and go bowling. Like, yeah. What? That's like the best life ever.
That really is.
I'm guessing your mother might have something to say about it, though.
We'll start calling you the Dean. The Dean abides.
The Dean. I love it.
The Dean abides.
Yeah. I think that's the universe I'd want to live in.
I need to watch that movie. I haven't seen the movie in a few years. I need to watch that movie again.
One of those, it was on TV here just the other day, so I had to leave it on because, you know, I just love that movie.
Oh, it's infinitely. I love how there's a whole religion based after dudism.
I know. Is there really?
There is. It is a legally, I don't know here in Canada, but I know it is a legally recognized religion that there are places in the world where they have dudism like events where they'll have sermons and you can legally be married have your officiant be a guy doing the dude impression, and he will marry you under the sign of dudism.
Of course there is. Oh, life as we know it.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
All right. Well, according to my recording, that is 59 minutes we've been talking or so, maybe a couple minutes less. But, you know, we've been on here for just about our hour, and I think we covered things pretty well. What do you think?
I think we covered everything, at least 99% of it.
Oh, come on. We covered it all.
Should I just go like 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%? Finish your drink 100%. Drink 100%.
Make sure everybody's done their drinks before we're finished here today. All right. Well, if you stuck with us and are drunk by now, thank you for sticking with us. Maybe you're passed out. I don't know. We didn't. Hopefully we weren't that boring. But
we're not boring. We're soothing.
I don't think it was that soon.
No, it's usually quite the opposite. Usually people say I'm being too loud, I'm making a scene, I need to keep my voice down, it's a library.
Although, from my experience in the classroom, I do put kids to sleep for a living. So there
I'm well aware.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot for tuning in, everyone. And I don't know when we'll have the next one, but we'll certainly let you know.
Oh, you'll know.
Yeah. In the meantime, we'll see you at the movies.